Okay, we back, and as promised, I'm joined on my cell by a gentleman called Jose Neves. Welcome, Jose.
Hi, Greg, and hi to the listeners. Thank you very much.
So Jose has written a book, which was
involved with this, is quite by chance. In fact, it happened in 2018. For the first time in my life, I did one of those walks in the Kruger Park that have been going on for a couple of years now. You know, you get those morning walks just hour from, and I did that at Letaba Rest Camp. It was the first time I sort of set my foot in the Virgin Kruger Park, and I thought this was amazing. And then two or three days later, I was at a bird hut near Letaba, and I saw this post on the wall that said, following the footsteps of giants, backpack the length of Kruger. And that really appealed to me. I mean, my memories of Kruger from when I was a kid with my dad and my family was that you couldn't even open your windows. You know, certainly you weren't allowed out of your car. And somebody was offering me an opportunity to hike to the Kruger National Park. And I just thought this is amazing. So there was only an email address, and I made contact, and I got in to a group because it's limited, as you can imagine, in the ability to do that, the number of people that can do that. And I managed to get into a group, and I did the first of the it's a multi-year venture. You can't do it all in one shot because it's over 600 kilometers of hiking. So the way it works is you do two legs per year of around 100 kilometers each, and it takes 3 years to complete. So that's how I got involved with it.
So a gentleman who's very well known in Hoedspruit and has a lot of passion wrote something about the book, which I'm just going to go into. Our friend in Hoedspruit called Tony Park. He said, walking wild is not your typical safari. No game drive, no cool sundowners, and definitely no fences. Instead, it's a 605-kilometer dust, sweat, and unforgettable moments as unlikely group of strangers set out to walk the entire length of Kruger National Park. Over six stages and 3 years, they walk from Crook Corner in the far north to Mullaline in the south, averaging 20 kilometers a day with heavy backpacks and only the wild for company. Led by two armed guides, they brave blistering heat, violent storms. At night, hyenas nosing their tents and lionesses strolling right through the camp. Some sleep soundly, others wide-eyed, waiting for dawn. Now, I'm probably the best guy to do this interview with you because I spent 3 months in the army living under the stars in the Kruger, as well as I've also done the vehicle up the fence, the 4x4, twice. So I certainly haven't walked it, but I certainly have seen it from top to bottom. So for someone who seems to have not spent a terrific amount of time in Kruger, it must have been a daunting thing for you on that first day or two starting out on that walk.
Indeed it is. Because first of all, you need to be pretty fit, you know. You're walking in areas where nobody hikes, because depending on animals and the terrain and where you are, you need to just go. Of course, generally head south, but there's no set route or anything, you just go. And because you carry a cupboard on your back, because you walk for 6 days and you've got to start each leg with all the food you need for the 6 days, a tent, because you sleep anywhere. There's no designated sleeping place, or bungalows, of course. And so the physical part of it is pretty tough. And I always found on each of the six legs that the first couple of days were the toughest, a bit because you're shaking off like, city life, but also because you're carrying the most food at the start. So it is daunting, but also the thing is, you had terms with nature there. And it's that experience that is so special. It's being in the bush, being unprotected, other than the two well-trained armed guards that we've got with us. But, you're dealing with nature on its terms. So, and being part of the rhythm of nature is actually probably the most special part of it. You know, you wake when it's light, you go to sleep when it's dark, you eat when you're hungry, and that is a very special part of it. And I also took the opportunity to have a complete detox from technology. I didn't even I left my watch before I even started the first leg, so I was completely timeless, and there's something special about that. Not having to worry about time and just letting the sun sort of guide what you do, and that's so. So that's part of the beauty of it. And then also things like water, especially up in the northern parts of the park where there's not so much water, that's a challenge because we took water from trickles running out of rocks. A lot of our water came from what looked like a dry river, but you know, elephants dig holes, yeah, and they find water. So we did the same thing. That's how we got water. So you really do fit into nature, and that's the specialness of it. It's very it enriches the soul, I believe.
Yeah, and I think you know, we very much, when we're in the army, very much look for water the same way. You dig that big hole, and then you can't believe the water actually comes through, and it's crystal clear. But certainly. You've broken the book up into obviously various things, and there's some really great headers to chapters. So before you even start the chapter, you know you're gonna read something like Kingdom of Spiders. You know, that could be a chapter which we'll get to just now. But a couple of them, obviously, I'm a big Shingwitzi area person. I love that area. And the first one I wanted you to tell us a little bit of a story was about the chapter called Run. And that was between Vlakteplaas Rangers Post to Mopani Race Camp in the spring of September 2019. Tell us a little bit about Run.
Yeah, did you have to pick on that one? Because there's an appendix at the back of the book headed Safe Hiking in the African Wild.
Yeah, I see that.
And the very first point in that appendix is
don't run.
Yeah. But we did. And I and the others are here to tell the tale. So,
yeah.
I'll tell you a little. So that happened just south of Vlakteplaas Ranges. And it was a day where we were, like, just attacked by elephants, it felt like. We had so many elephants. Why I call that one Run is that, in that area there's still a lot of stunted Mopani. And depending on the height of the stunted Mopani, you can't really see. I mean, we are not as tall as the Mopani. So you don't have any visibility. And because the Mopani is obviously not planted, it's random, you don't have line of sight or anything. You're always weaving through the Mopani. And that is actually... sorry, I've got another call coming here. Can you still hear me, right?
Yeah, no problem, eh?
So we were weaving through this Mopani, and all of a sudden we heard... and that is, just by the way, that is where some of the greatest danger of the Kruger hike is when you're weaving through trees and you don't have line of sight, because the last thing you want to do is surprise animals, and especially elephants. So there we were weaving through this Mopani, and next thing we heard this a cavalcade of stampeding elephants. And it was behind us, but we had no sight of it. Two guards then were, some of your listeners may know them, Arnold Bam and Warren Dazel. And next thing, so we're following them in single file, but all sort of beginning to look behind us to see if we could see anything. And then the stampede like just got louder. And next thing, Arnold, who was our lead guard, says, "Run." And I couldn't believe it. and so we've got these heavy backpacks on our back, which was also the first day of that leg. And we start running, but now, because we're all running, like in a general direction, because you've got to weave through the Mopani, you lose sight of each other. And hear the stampede behind us. Plus, you know, the guard had just said, "Run," and I thought, I'm running, and I'm looking back to see if I can see elephants. And we eventually came to a place where we regrouped all together, and then the stampede stopped. And then next thing, it started up again. Like for like a minute or so, and then stopped. And then Arnold Bam our guide, he remembered when he was the day before we started the hike, he had gone past the Langtoon Dam, which is, you know, it's off limits to tourists, but there's actually a South African National Defence Force military base there. And what they had done, what Arnold had seen them do, was clearing all the grass and burning the grass around for military exercises. So what we thought was an elephant stampede was actually a military exercise.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. And just by the way, Arnold said he made an exception. He said, run, because he knew that no animal could see us. He was just trying to get us away from the area.
Okay.
So that's why that exception was made.
I've had a very amazing, I've spent a night at that Langtoon Dam in a tent, and had lion walk in front of a tent there, which was also amazing, but a day for another story. One of the things about the Kruger and having been there and slept there is those big rolling storms that do come in, and you know, especially if you're there in the rainy season. And I see you've got in leg 3 in autumn, April, which is not a great time for rain. You've got stormy weather, and then later down the line, you have another one, which is again autumn, March 22, which is entitled Showers and Lightning. So, you know, talk us through some of the change of weather and some of the weather conditions during the walk.
Yeah. So that first one that happened on the last day of Leg 3, it happened on the Letaba River, where the Letaba River finishes, because it actually... There's a confluence where it joins up with the Olifants River, and those two rivers then it's close to the border with Mozambique, or the fence with Mozambique. There's no border post there, nobody goes there, but close to the fence with Mozambique, and we camped that night at that confluence, and in fact we had part of an early finish, and we hiked the extra 1 kilometer, not all of us, but most of us, just to go and view the conference. And it was a beautiful, clear day. And by the time we got back to camp, and we had made camp on the river itself, on a dry part of the riverbank, because, you know, at that time of year, the river was flowing, but there were many sandbanks, which make an excellent place to camp at night. And so we had pitched our tents, and we came back from the conference, and it was close to nightfall, it was getting dark, and the tents were all pitched, and Louis Lema, who was guiding us, and in fact is the chairman of the Mahari's region of the Honorary Rangers, he had even made a fire. And next thing, it's unbelievable how quickly it happened. Next thing, dark clouds rolled in. But none of us had anticipated that. And Louis called us together, and I was actually about to start cooking, so I had everything out. And Louis called us together, and he says, guys, pack your things. We need to move to the top. And we were on the riverbed, and there was a ridge going up the side. And this thing looked quite big. I don't know the height, but... But he said, grab your tents, grab everything, and we've got to do it now, quickly. So that's what we did. So I stuffed everything already. I took my boots off already. I was in my slip-slops.
Yeah.
And I stuffed everything into my backpack. There was no time to dismantle the tent. I grabbed it by the spine, and I went up the hill in my slip-slops. So I had stones and thorns and everything under my feet, but there was nothing I could do, and we all rushed to the top. And then as we got to the top, we were busy putting the pegs in to secure our tents, and even before we finished that, a huge storm came in. The wind howled and rained, and so we were all hungry. We couldn't eat. You can't make a fire in your tent, no. That's a fun island. And then there was a short break for a while, and we all came out, and we gathered sort of to eat and make a food. But before we could even get ready or eat or even start preparing food, the storm came back. So we all went to bed hungry that night. And I tell you, that wind was so bad. If it wasn't for my body weight and the weight of my backpack, that tent would have blown away.
Yeah, it is crazy how that water and that storm can come up before you know it. And that weather can be quite extreme. You know, you think Kruger's quite a dry place, but when that storm comes up, it can come up like you were out to sea. Moving along, there is a chapter I want to come back to because I think it would be a good conclusion to our talk. But the next one I'm going to ask you was leg five. Now when XC six and Raiders to Lower Sabi with a chapter called Lions. That has to be a good story. Give us a little bit about the Lion encounter in leg five, which was March 2022.
The one night, I think it was the second night on that leg, it was one of those nights where we could make a fire. We can't always make a fire. It depends on the length, the height of the grass, and if we can find an open clearing. But we made a fire, and we all sat around chatting and cooking on our little gas stoves. And the first thing that happened is that while we were sitting there, someone spotted movement behind Mari and I. Mari was one of the hikers on our group, and it was our hyena. He was standing right behind us. But anyway, we then packed up, and some of us went to bed sooner than others, but Mari was one of the last to go to bed. And, being a lady, when you have to do your thing, it's not as easy as it is for men. I still think this was the nearest miss that we had in the Kruger, because the grass was quite long around us, and Mari went to do her thing in this grass. And when she came back to her tent, she saw a lion around the tent next to her tent. And next thing, this lion turned into two. It was two lionesses right there, and she shouted. First, when you're close to animals, you don't want to make any sound. We're taught to be quiet. So she shouted lion, but not very high. That had no effect. And then she realized she needs help. And then she screamed lion loud. And the two guards came running with their rifles. But the amazing thing is that the two lionesses then just walked around the camp and left. But that was so lucky. I mean, there was a lady doing her thing in the long grass. Two lionesses right there. I couldn't believe, obviously they weren't hungry or something. Maybe they didn't like the style of barking. So after 2 days of barking, no shower, you know.
So... Just in closing and wrapping this up, I'm just going to read an extract from the PR release. It said, Walking Wild captures the magic and the madness of life on foot in one of the world's most iconic national park. It's a story of adventure, camaraderie, and deep immersion in the wild, journeys that leave no one unchanged. Walking Wild is a testament to resilience, to discovering the deep connection between people and nature. And if you ever dreamt of experiencing the Kruger beyond the safari vehicle, this book is your ticket to tale. So I want to ask you about you as a person, having done this walk, and what it has done to you perhaps as a person in terms of change of life. And one of your chapters is Beads of Introspection, which is in leg four. Do you want to just comment on what a walk like this in the Kruger Park has done to you as a person?
As I said, I think right in the beginning, I feel enriched by my experience. It's definitely a unique experience. So first of all, it's not something too many people can ever do, because whilst this initiative is designed in one part to raise funds for the Honorary Rangers, it's very limited, because only first of all, you need to be guided by professionals. And also, in the Kruger Park, and this needs to be done in a very controlled way. At the most, 30 people a year may finish their third year. So no matter how many years pass, you're still going to get very small numbers of people who can say that they've walked the length of the Kruger National Park. Just compare that to Everest, for example. You know, Everest, since 1953, there have been 12,000 ascents of Everest, you know, by almost 8,000 different people. I just said that to put in context the uniqueness of this experience. But I'll tell you, how it affected me. The one time, and I'll talk about it, we didn't notice a column of Matabidi ants walking past the path we were on, and we stood on them and you can hear them hissing. And then I felt so bad about that us humans were walking where we shouldn't be, and we, took out a column of Matabidi ants. But then I thought, if we had been an elephant, the footprints would have been bigger and taken out more. But that's just one point. The other thing that really touched me, though, is just the impact that humans have on the Kruger National Park and the sustainability and the future of the Kruger National Park, because it faces huge, huge issues. And the point is, and what hit home with me, is that I and a few others, have walked from north to south through the Kruger National Park carrying everything we need to survive. And we did it in 36 days.
Oh.
And that means that 36 days of hiking, and that means the Kruger Park is not an infinite resource. And if we don't look after it, that it won't have a future. And it is one of the most special places on Earth. And the threats that Kruger faces from, you all know about them, rhino poaching, what's happened. I mean, the month of May and what happened with vultures is just sickeningly terrible. But the biggest threat to the Kruger Park is actually bushmeat poaching, by people that are hungry. And it doesn't condone it, of course. But it's finding solutions for that. And there's no one simple solution. Whilst we need to reduce demand, we need to fight this with a toolkit of different initiatives and involve the communities. Otherwise, the Kruger Park will remain a threatened environment.
I couldn't agree more. And, we're talking to the right people. Yeah, Jose, it's been really, really great talking to you. Just a little quickly, the book available at all major bookstores?
Yes, it is. It's available at all exclusive bookstores and all other bookstores.
I was at the little bookshop on Friday for another book launch, and a friend of mine actually had seen the book at my house and actually bought it to take home with them. So if those of you in Hoedspruit, it is available at the little bookstore. I'm sure the copies will be available at the roadshow on Wednesday night. Correct.
Correct. So at the roadshow, the launch in Hoedspruit is at Harvest House in Zandspruit Boulevard from 6 o'clock in the evening. Cool. And we will have books for sale. And also the books for sale on Takealot if you want to order it.
And is there a digital version, or is it only available in paperback at the moment?
No, we're just finalising the digital version.
Okay.
So it will be available online as well. Or in ebook format quite soon.
So it's been really great talking to you. I wish you all the well with your book. I am still reading it. I'm a bit of a slow reader, but I might want to get you back again sometime to talk about one or two stories, and we'll reach out to you through your publicity agent. But well done. Great book, and we wish you well, and we hope that the launch on Wednesday goes incredibly well.
Thank you, Greg, and thanks to your listeners.
Cool, and we'll pop this podcast in the next day or so up on our website, and I'll certainly share the link with you.
Okay, thank you.
Go well, eh? Bye-bye.
Thanks, bye-bye. Cheers.